Hello and welcome to Refreshingly Honest Christian. My name is David Metcalf.
And I'm Jake Moyer.
Welcome back, Jake.
Hey, man. Hey, it's great to be here.
We're here together. We're making it happen. And you've taken a little hiatus.
I have.
Started a new job. Lots been going on.
I had the COVIDs.
You had the Rona.
I had the COVID-19.
How was it? Are you doing okay?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, it was like I think I got diagnosed like the 15th of November. So I don't know when this podcast is going to release, but a month and a half ago, almost a month ago. And it sucked during it for sure, but it was just felt like I was exhausted the whole time, and I didn't have the worst part was no taste and no smell. That sucked, dude, because like all I could do is just stay at home with my wife, who ended up getting it as well, and we just sat there and ate, and you couldn't taste anything. I literally at one point I squirted like for 3 seconds of like sriracha into my mouth and couldn't taste anything.
That's insane.
It was wild. But yeah, man, fully recovered. I'm a little bit tired still, a little bit like, I feel like my memory's a little mushy, but that's probably just because I'm exhausted and haven't worked out in a month. But yeah, things are going good. Back at it, started a new job, and life is good, man. It's almost Christmas. Going to celebrate.
I know.
Hopefully get some time in the snow. I'm hoping for a white Christmas, but it doesn't look like we're going to get one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's hard to believe. 2020, man. It's just been the year. It's just, we've gone through the ringer. It's hard to believe it's almost over.
It is hard to believe. It's been a really crappy year.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about it today. Like, I mean, yeah, you can think about how all the good things that have happened and for sure gratitude is necessary, but man, it's been like emotionally, it's been like a tough one.
Yeah.
Cause like you don't have the, I mean, for me, I was talking with my father-in-law about it. Like, I feel like I'm at a constant relational deficit where I'm just like longing for deep conversation with people.
Yeah.
And like
connection.
Contact.
Yeah.
You know, like physical contact, not just like, you know what I mean? Like not just phone calls or Zoom, but like actually being with people, feeling their presence, you know?
Yeah. Well, weirdly enough. Yeah. Oh, you dying? You're dying.
No, I'm okay. COVID's back.
Yeah. No, well, weirdly enough, I mean, it's actually made me think a lot about church lately, even recently. So for me, one of our mutual friends, pastor on staff at the church that we normally go to, reached out to him, and it made me start thinking a lot about church and I kind of miss it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, dude, I do too. I miss like, cause at the last like season of life, I've had zero other than like prayer. I've had zero interaction with the Lord, like no time of worship, no church interaction, no reading the Bible at all. And so, I definitely miss that, but I also miss the community aspect, you know?
Yeah.
And I've really
bumping into people and
seeing them, kind of catching up, genuine or not. Like it feels good to be around people, but yeah, the church aspect, I miss having like that deeper connection with.
Well, it's a thing where you just bump into each other. It's a really convenient way, a casual way to kind of rub shoulders with people. And Tessa and I, my wife, were talking about that recently where like it actually made us question like, do we even have friends anymore? Like it just makes you realize like a lot of the relationships that you have in like church, even it's like many of them are just kind of like casual relationships.
Yeah.
And not even that that's bad, but it's just like, they're not the type of relationships that like you would just reach out to and be like, hey, what's going on with you? Like it would kind of feel weird if you did make that initial reach out or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's made me like the few friends that I am close with, like maybe be a lot more intentional or want to be a lot more intentional.
Yeah.
Honestly, the biggest cry of my heart to use a extremely Christianese term, the biggest like desire I've had is just like, I freaking just want people to know my shit right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I want to be known. I want to be vulnerable, even though it's uncomfortable at times. I'm like, I just want to be known.
Yeah.
You know? By someone and for them to respond however.
Well, and that's, and again, it's that, I think it's the casualness of being able to like just bump into each other and catch up and shoot the shit or whatever, like where that does come up naturally. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting. COVID land, whatever you want to call this, it does make you kind of take stock, take inventory of the people in your life. And, mm-hmm. you know, it made me reach out to some people. And, but yeah, man. But all in all, it's been okay year for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. Not a great, yeah, maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm like this terrible place, but it definitely, there's like an underlying feeling of stress in every decision.
Yeah. Kind
of, for me. And whether it's because we're young, there's a lot of factors for us. Like, we've been trying to get pregnant for a long time. We're just going way deep real fast here.
Go for it.
But, like, we've been trying to get pregnant for so long, so that's a big stressor. And then, you know, family stuff, you know, all the different drama that comes with that. And then on top of that, COVID and job and just, I don't know, maybe it's just, like, the stresses of life that everybody experiences. But for me personally, yeah, I think just, like, you have all those normal stressors, and then you have the concept of potentially you killing one of your family members unintentionally. You know what I mean? Like, oh, if I touch my mom,
yeah,
there's a chance that I couldn't be, you know what I mean? There's just like that factor. So yeah, I don't know. It's been a decent year, but there's self-management and self-awareness has been like a crucial thing for myself, you know?
Yeah. I'm just thankful the election's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't even need to talk about that, but just,
dude, me gosh, too.
Yeah. It's just been a crazy year.
I don't think it's fully over, unfortunately. But I think, yeah, yeah, I'm thankful that there's like some resolve.
Yeah. So. Well, we're at the time of this recording, where it's like the week before Christmas, and man, you know, it's just, I'm kind of ready for that dead week after uh-huh. Christmas, where uh-huh. like there's just nothing going on, nothing's expected of you.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like this weird, ambiguous time.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny. I even just today I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about like the way we even box 2020 as if like it's like everything's done or everything's over. It's like mm-hmm. it's not, but in our minds, like mentally, it's like that classic like new, oh, it's the new year, we're gonna start over,
resolutions,
like,
yeah,
yeah, you gotta begin again.
Yeah, I think we like, yeah, as humans we like to like categorize things or have a beginning and an end. You're right, man. It's not though. I don't think it's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, but all that to say, you're back.
I'm back.
We're here.
It's been a great day. It's been a great night.
I mean, we haven't, I've been kind of going solo with the podcast just because a lot's been going on yeah. in your world. But yeah, man, I'm happy to have you back in the studio and we can have some interesting conversations.
Me too, man. I'm stoked to be back. I've missed this a lot. It's like a freaking good, good times.
Yeah. It's a nice touch base.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, this is kind of a weird transition, but the reason I bring it up is we just recorded some videos for our Patreon, and I'm just excited about that, man. Like, kind of us intentionally engaging more, speaking of community, with the listeners of this show, and I feel like we're doing some pretty cool stuff over there to really, like, stir up some conversation. And
yeah. And dude, I totally agree. I feel like it's, like, a much-needed thing. Like, even afterwards when we went live and talked to that kid from Arizona, like, that was rad. I think, like, the more we can do to, like, engage with anybody who wants to have a conversation around these topics that we discuss, the better. And Patreon's a good outlet or a good formula, pathway, whatever you want to call it. Let's do it. I think that was, yeah, that'll be sweet. Well, I'm interested to see like what comes from it.
It's funny because I don't even view it. I know people, some people like they hear Patreon, they're like, ugh, like whatever. But I don't even view it necessarily as like a paywall. It's more of, at the end of the day, you and I, we both are normal guys. We both have jobs. Like, we have a lot going on. Yeah. So the more that we can, I don't want to say like justify, but the more that we can put into this and kind of like, I don't know, man. I'm just excited to, we've got some people in our community right now, but I just want to keep inviting people into that. So, but yeah, man, today's conversation, I'm actually excited to get into this. I had an interview with a person by the name of Chrissy Stroop, and she's a writer, scholar, ex-evangelical. Do you know that term?
Like evangelical, but used to be.
Have you heard that? Yeah.
I have not heard that, but that's awesome.
It's interesting. I think it's like, for some people, it's like, it's like they've either like left the faith completely, mm-hmm. or it's an interesting like branding. Like, I think some people even think that's what we are.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah. I think we're like ex-evangelical adjacent. I don't know.
Or our own subcategory.
Yeah. I don't even know, but it's interesting. So I actually came across this person on Twitter. I know you're on Twitter actually now too.
I am. I only retweet my wife's tweets.
It's been a long time coming. I mean, I remember we talked about this, but anyway, all that to say, you're on Twitter, and this person, Chrissy Stroop's on Twitter, but she actually started this conversation about I left because, and it's kind of interesting. Like, people are just telling the stories of what led them to leave the church.
Really?
And to leave the faith in some cases altogether. And I'm not going to lie, as I looked into this thread, you can check this out too, dear listeners. It's actually like some of the stories are like really heart-wrenching.
Oh, geez.
But I don't know, man. It's interesting. Like, I think at the end of the day, we're all just looking for a group to belong to.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know. But I also like look at a lot of these people, and it seems like they're, you know, they're doing better in some cases. It's interesting. I don't know. I'm not necessarily that I would even advocate that for that, but I just wanted to bring Chrissy on and to like hear like her story, like her I left because story, and then kind of what led to this. But anyway, all that to say, seamless transition here. Yeah, I'm sad you couldn't have been there, but it was a great conversation, Jake, and you have to listen to it sometime.
Oh, I will.
So
plan on it.
That said, dear listeners, without further ado, here is my conversation with Chrissy Stroop. All right, Chrissy Stroop, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to have you. I stumbled across you on Twitter. I feel like more and more Twitter is exposing me to the world, basically.
Twitter's a really interesting space. I mean, in recent years, we have learned how very effectively Twitter and Facebook can be used to destroy democracy. after having been told, you know, if you remember all the way back to the Arab Spring and things like that, oh, social media has so much democratic potential. But in a certain sense, it still does. I mean, it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah.
So it does help certain people who may often be the kind of people who are not necessarily heard in sort of the mainstream elite public sphere, mm-hmm. to get a hearing. And certainly I've been among those, you know, loosely defined as ex-evangelicals, part of this ex-evangelical movement, trying to use Twitter, especially Twitter, to get a hearing for our concerns.
Yeah.
There are also a number of groups on Facebook where it's more about just processing together and not letting outsiders in to look at that. But,
yeah,
you know, Twitter is where we find each other, and where sometimes with hashtags, like most recently hashtag I left because, you know, you can generate enough interest, enough visibility, collective visibility to get maybe some press or to get people talking about,
yeah,
why are people leaving evangelicalism? And I do think that's important because there's still a lot of big barriers there and taboos with like the legacy media outlets. I mean, I know evangelicals complain about how they're represented in the press, but I think they're treated with kid gloves. I think they get off super easy. In fact, mostly they're allowed to even write about themselves. I mean, look who writes about them in the Washington Post and the New York Times. It's Elizabeth Diaz, Wheaton graduate, Michael Gerson, Wheaton graduate, George W. Bush administration alum, and Sarah Pulliam Bailey, Wheaton graduate.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, how fair is that?
Totally.
So I think a lot of what happens there is, you know, these evangelicals in the media or other people who just have concerns about coming across as unfriendly to Christianity end up painting a very rosy picture of evangelical subculture as, you know, kind of quirky, has some problematic parts. Oh my God, we cannot understand how they support Donald Trump. But, well, by the way, that's really easy to understand. If you would just ask anyone who, you know, knows the answer because we lived it and we left, I left because of that sort of bigotry and Christian nationalism, you know, but they don't want to know the real answer because it makes a large Christian demographic that is considered to be a mainstream one look bad.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned, so I left because that was what I came across. So I think a mutual connection of ours, Hemant Mehta, he runs the Friendly Atheist. He actually shared this tweet that you had, it looks like you retweeted some, you were talking to somebody who said, hey, all, why don't you share your stories of why you left evangelicalism or any form of conservative Christianity. And so anyway, he shared that basically why people are explaining why they left church using the hashtag I left because, and to tie that in with Twitter, I mean, the thing I love so much about it is even for me in my own personal faith, I was not very involved in Twitter up until, you know, the last couple of years. And what I've loved about it is it does give people a voice and it helps us to find each other and to connect. And it's, mm-hmm. and it's, I mean, I've also noticed with you, Chrissy, so you've, on your website, you say you've led a pretty weird life up to this point, but you say like you're the creator of viral hashtags, like things like Christian alt facts, empty the pews, expose Christian schools. And now I would say I left because like it seems to me like you're leading a really important discussion. And so I'm just really, again, I'm just so excited to have you here and to talk about it. So why don't you just bring us up to speed on a little bit what went, like what prompted this conversation? I left because, like, how did that come about?
Sure. So I could just say very briefly that I kind of started blowing up on Twitter during the 2016 election cycle. I started finding, you know, other ex-evangelicals in 2015 and sort of the looming Trump phenomenon and just, you know, the extremism of the Christian right toward the end of the Obama administration was causing people to start looking for each other. And that happened more and more as 2016 progressed, you know, especially after Trump clinched the nomination. But many of us had left evangelicalism in a way that was, you know, protracted, painful, isolating, and it's hard to find people who understand. Social media suddenly started working to help us find other people who had been there and so understood what that was like. And that was great. But the reason that I started getting a wider audience beyond just kind of joining this ex-evangelical community on Twitter and a few other communities was that I have this very weird mixture of academic knowledge and skills and lived experience that allows me to comment on not only Russia, Russian history, and Russian politics today, and the American Christian right, but also on the connections between those things. So I actually have a PhD in modern Russian history from Stanford University. Until 2018, roughly. I mean, I guess I'd kind of decided I was leaving even in 2017 or even 2016. Before that, I was still trying to get a tenure track academic job. I just sort of wanted to be a mild-mannered professor, but you know, those professorships are not there anymore. But my whole interest in Russia came from me through my Christian school connection there, just kind of randomly ending up as a short-term youth missionary to Russia in 1999 with an organization called OMS International. At the time, they were just their initials. They used to be the Oriental Missionary Society, which is super cringe. They kind of trace the roots of their missionary efforts, or at least, you know, the people that they look back to, you know, Hudson Taylor and his mission in China was a big deal to this organization. I believe it has some sort of connection to that somewhere in the past. But in any case, it's this big interdenominational thing based in Greenwood, Indiana. They didn't stop calling it Oriental Missionary Society because they thought there was anything wrong with that name. They explained it to me when I was, you know, getting ready for this mission trip that, oh, it's just because our mission has expanded beyond the Orient. Yeah, so they've since rebranded, though, and evangelicals do sometimes get savvy about their branding. I mean, they're now called One Mission Society, And if you go to their website, they have a little ticker in the upper right-hand corner that supposedly shows how many souls they have saved this year. And they save like a soul every 30 seconds or something. It's ridiculous and hilarious. anyway,
yeah.
So this is, I got, you know, you had the whole Russia connection with Trump, right? The Trump Tower meeting, and then all this stuff came out about the National Prayer Breakfast and the NRA and Maria Butina. And in the early days of like looking into that and the whole, you know, collusion thing, was there collusion? And I ended up publishing some policy research showing how indeed there's a lot of not just affinities, but even direct connections and feedback loops between Putin's Russia and right-wing Americans and Europeans, and particularly the Christian right. So this is something that I was speaking to right at that time when people were getting interested in this. That helped me gain traction on Twitter. And then my knowledge of the Christian right, well, it's not exactly something that I studied in grad school, though I am a trained historian and I read a lot, but it's both my lived experience and, you know, reading and learning. And so having become, a somewhat large account on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm up to 55,000 followers at this point, which is, you know, I guess by like major social media guru standards, big for a small account or small for a big account. But,
sure.
You know, it's enough to have some influence. I personally hate the word influencer.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But in any case, you know, I was sort of I became the most visible ex-evangelical on Twitter, I suppose you could say. Not exactly because I tried to be that, but it just happened.
Right.
And so since then, my goal has really been to be someone who can help facilitate conversations and, yes, promote my own work, but at the same time also amplify a lot of other people's voices. I've always thought of the loose ex-evangelical movement, such as it is, as a leaderless movement. Wow. I get annoyed when people are like, well, you're a leader of this movement, or even worse, you're the leader of this movement, because you can't get anywhere with something like this without collective visibility, which is something that hashtags allow you to do.
Yeah.
And so I hit upon Empty the Pews just kind of spontaneously in the moment, and it became sort of a thing way back in 2017 after Charlottesville. And I was just riffing on how, you know, the major evangelical leaders on social media or on television were either not talking about this or actually just defending Trump's very fine people on both sides remarks that he made in the wake of that Unite the Right rally, where a right-wing white Christian terrorist killed Heather Heyer. And, you know, these guys in polo shirts with tiki torches were chanting, "Jews will not replace us." And he said, "Very fine people on both sides." Right. And, you know, and there was Robert Jeffress on TV saying there is not a racist bone in Trump's body on CBN, I believe it was. Yeah, it definitely was. And so I was just riffing on Twitter about how frustrating it is that evangelicals never listen to any criticism. And then I was just riffing and thinking, you know, they are afraid of losing the youth because they know that they are. So let's just throw that in their faces. Hashtag empty the pews.
Yeah.
You're gonna keep losing us
if
you keep doubling down on this bigotry. And so that was sort of the first one where there was really no planning there whatsoever. And Exposed Christian Schools also just started spontaneously in the moment. I was really frustrated at people defending Second Lady Karen Pence, and I am a Hoosier, by the way. Going back to a teaching job at an anti-LGBTQ Christian school of the type that I attended and graduated from. I attended Christian schools in both Indianapolis and Colorado Springs for a couple of years. In middle school, I was in Colorado Springs because my dad took a job as the music pastor at a church plant under the missionary church out there that allowed him to do all the, like, you know, fun, cool, mega church inspired, seeker sensitive stuff. Like, oh yeah, we're going to call the bulletin program and we're going to make church a rock show. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, all the same white supremacist, patriarchal, anti-LGBTQ bullshit theology, but now wrapped in skinny jeans. So great.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did that and we then kind of stayed in that sort of version of evangelicalism after that. But we moved back to Indiana because, there, well, you know, the senior pastor there kind of started going on a power trip and abusing his power, as often happens in churches. And both my dad and the guy who was the youth pastor there were from Indiana. So they wrote a strongly worded letter to the missionary church and then went back to Indiana and started their own church plant. And then that church plant failed to become self-funding in the amount of time that the missionary church gave it. So they're not friends anymore. I mean, but this is typical, right? This is evangelicalism. You grow up with your parents in ministry and you see how the sausage is made.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. There's this rise, and I really want to unpack this idea of evangelical, and it is a rising phenomenon. And again, the thing I love so much about Twitter is it's giving us a place to talk about it and to find each other. And I feel like I Left Because is a huge reflection on that. And why don't you just define for us like what evangelical even means?
Okay, sure. Well, yeah, let me back up a bit, because as I often do, I kind of went down a rabbit trail there. But so hashtag exposed Christian schools began in January 2019. And then in just a couple of days, it got over 200,000 tweets. And it was also totally spontaneous. And it started with me quote tweeting David French, who was defending Christian schools. That particular kind of Christian school, you know, it's usually evangelical schools that call themselves Christian schools or Christian academies. But then because of Covington, it just super blew up, though that of course was a Catholic school, and got some news coverage. And I Left Because is the first hashtag evangelical hashtag since then to blow up in a similar way. It wasn't as big, but nevertheless, it is generating discussion with Hemant Mehta, as you said, you know, covered it on The Friendly Atheist, and we're talking about it here, and I know there are some other things happening. Looks like it'll be covered in a news article in Vice, unless that article gets killed.
That's exciting.
So yeah, for facilitating conversations about these sorts of things on Twitter, to my mind, that has two purposes. Helping people find each other and realize that they're not alone, which also is still very meaningful to me, even after all this time. Because a lot of times on these hashtags, you'll see people saying, oh, I thought I was the only one.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that, right? Making the connections is important. But to me, it's also about exposing the Christian right in a way that hopefully changes the national conversation, eventually shifts even the elite media, so that it becomes possible to talk about the harm that can be done by even a big mainstream group of a Christian group or a Christian demographic. There's been a lot of resistance to really broaching that in the press, but that is starting to change a little. And I want to see that change, because I think that if we can't face up to that, we're not going to have new political possibilities becoming realizable. And only collective visibility can do that. You know, no individual leader, no individual memoir, no matter how great it is, can have that impact. It has to be, there are a lot of us, there are so many of us telling our stories that you can no longer ignore them.
Yeah. There's absolutely, when, like you said, like, is there, I've even seen recently, there's no such thing like as an evangelical church. Like, but this idea.
Here's the other aggravating thing, right? That there are people in Christian spaces who think that evangelical is just some, you know, emergent church 2.0. And it's nothing that coherent, but it's also just not that at all. So around that hashtag, or people who define themselves as evangelicals or XVs, there's a general understanding that we don't have a shared metaphysics, let alone a shared theology, and we're not looking for one. What we're doing is finding other people who understand, processing, you know, our stuff from evangelicalism with other people. It's not a replacement for therapy, but it certainly can be meaningful to just know that you're not alone in having these particular kinds of experiences. And now you're starting to see in cutting edge psychological research and therapeutic practices, people taking religious trauma seriously.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's an important issue here. A lot of people have real trauma from growing up in an oppressive faith system and then leaving that and losing maybe all their social support, or at least a lot of it, and complicating everything, you know, because high control religious groups brook no dissent. Or, you know, it's now, I think this sort of anecdote has become a cliche, right? You know, your small groups, like your family, they bring you meals when somebody is sick, they come visit you in the hospital, they're always there to help you pack your moving truck, whatever, until maybe you suggest that, hey, maybe Rob Bell's right about hell, and then you get Holy Ghosted, right?
I mean, that's
as soon
hilarious.
As you disagree about the ideology in any way, they're gone, they're out of your life. So the connection was never more than skin deep. It's all about just being in the club. It's high control. It's cult-like. So it's a tough thing to process, and it's important to realize that you're not alone. It's that many people have had this experience, and you can connect with them. Yeah. And it's also, I think, important to just get a hearing in the public sphere to say, you know, look, this big old branch of Christianity is doing a lot of harm, and hey, American public, you should probably know about this. By the way, it has a whole lot to do with your political problems.
Well, and I know so many people who I've talked to on this podcast, where either maybe they still call themselves Christian or they don't. That was it. That was the thing. This embrace of Donald Trump and like over spiritualizing, you know, him and saying he's, you know, God appointed and he's whatever. And two, you mentioned, like, I love that. I've never heard that before. Holy Ghosted, where you,
I can't claim credit for that. I don't know who can, but it's pretty great.
and it's such a thing because, I mean, I can just say this. So I don't know where I fall. I feel evangelical adjacent. Like I myself am trying to figure that out. And
that's a valid place to be for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I just think so many of us, like you said, we're processing, we're trying to, like, it's not a supplement for therapy. Like, I see a therapist, this podcast is, you know, isn't my only form of therapy, but, I have noticed in the conversations that I've had with people who can relate and they can identify, they get the culture, they get the language, they get the weird manipulation, they get the fucked up, whatever, you know, understanding of this, of a lot of the, you know, church trauma, pain, things that we've been, I don't want to say brainwashed, but really, like, I mean, in some cases go that far. And so,
yeah, certainly indoctrination. I mean, there are just certain messages that are pounded into your head from birth. And one of them is that you're a horrible person who has no worth unless Jesus saves you, which is not a very healthy thing to program into a child's brain.
Yeah. Or this idea that, you know, you mentioned Rob Bell, like everyone that you know who doesn't believe what you believe is going to hell. Like that's a recipe for depression right there. I was not raised in the church. I came to it, as like a high schooler, but still, a lot of that indoctrination I've really been having to sort through and leave behind, like, a lot of stuff that I'm like, no, I don't buy this, and here's why. And actually, it's been really freeing. So again, you know, Twitter and these hashtags and this community that you know that you're a voice in, I am just so happy to have found. And I think so many people, I know I don't just speak for myself. So many people are getting life from it and really finding like a new sense of freedom and I don't know, it's really unique. It's something that I'm really actually thankful for more and more. I never thought I would say that, but I've never been more thankful for Twitter.
Well, hey kids out there, a Thanksgiving message for us all.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh man.
I'm really grateful for that aspect of Twitter as well. I guess I'm grateful for Twitter. Okay, I'll grudgingly admit I'm grateful for Twitter. No, I really should be, because Twitter is my bread and butter. I mean, it's also how editors find me and how I get work and that sort of thing. I just, you know, the shadow side of it is also just always sort of on my mind. But I've gotten a lot out of Twitter, and connecting and being able to express myself that way has been something that's really helpful and meaningful. It hasn't been, you know, without tension. I mean, in ex-evangelical Twitter, such as it was, we've had dust ups and fallings out, and, you know, some people have broken with me, I've broken with them. So, I mean, and that's, I think, actually why even there was no big ex-evangelical hashtag between January 2019 and now. What had been the Twitter ex-evangelical community, I don't want to go into it too much, just really got sort of split over some bullshit drama that didn't need to happen. And part of that involved me trying to stop it by coming out as trans, and like fully coming out as a trans woman earlier than I really felt ready to do. So it was messy.
Tell me about that. So one of the reasons that I was so excited to talk to you was to hear your story. Like, could you tell us a little bit about your I Left Because and how that intersects with,
sure.
your life now? Yeah.
Yeah. And so speaking of that hashtag, another thing that I kind of keep forgetting to say that I want to say briefly is that, I was quote tweeting Rod Dreher, who published this thing in the American Conservative that I think was published in very bad faith, pun quasi intended, about why kids are leaving the evangelical church, supposedly. Dreher is a former evangelical who became a Catholic, and now he's an Orthodox Christian. And so sort of the worst kind of zealous convert and arch reactionary. And we were talking about too, how, you know, today on Twitter, on Christian Twitter, there was some buzz about this, but the people on Christian Twitter who want to talk about ex-evangelicals or people leaving the church tend to not want to talk to us. And that's a problem. And so that's really what hashtag I Left Because was all about. Not that Rod Dreher wants to hear or likely will even respond, but it gave us a chance to express ourselves, to be heard by the public that he was hoping would receive his twisted, you know, ideological version of why kids leave instead of our actual voices, which are now out there. I already said that my parents are in ministry. It wasn't from right when I was born. My mom, before I was born, was a public school teacher for maybe a year or two. I forget exactly how long. And she stayed home with my sister and me. My sister is not quite 2 years younger than I am. But she's 1 year behind me. She was 1 year behind me in school. And so mom stayed home until both of us were old enough to be in school. And then she went back to teaching, but she went to teach at Heritage Christian School in Indianapolis, which is where most of her teaching career has been. And she is still a teacher there. And it is very much a Christian nationalist sort of Christian school. You know, it has become much more racially integrated in recent years than it used to be. And that may have changed some things. My mom says it does, but I can't really observe it from the inside anymore. You know, apparently they even have a diversity coordinator and she's actually a Black woman. I find this all quite baffling. When I was there as a kid, there was like 1 to 2 token people of color per class. And we got the very clear message that good Christians must only and always vote Republican. Sure, we represented a variety of denominations because this was a K-12 school. It wasn't associated with any particular church. But still, we were all expected to conform on certain things. Banning abortion, no rights for queer people, young earth creationism. And young earth creationism was one where maybe there was a little wiggle room, but people who are theistic evolutionists are definitely not very spiritual. They might be saved, but they're, you know, they need to work on their walk with God, obviously. It was that kind of Christian school. And I mean, we had elementary school talent shows, which were a lot of fun, to be fair, but at the end of them, we would do this audience sing along with that god awful Lee Greenwood song, God Bless the USA. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, in the elementary school there, we said three pledges every morning to the American flag, the Christian flag, and the Bible in that order. And let me tell you, the pledges to the Christian flag and the Bible are definitely not pledges that inspire a pluralist vision. One of the verses we had plastered on one of the elementary school walls was, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord." And we knew exactly what that meant. Mm. It meant no abortion, no gays, always vote Republican,
right?
You know, and take the Bible literally. So we got, I mean, we got all the Christian worldview rhetoric, you know, the kind of stuff I'm talking about, the kind of presuppositionalist apologetics.
Yeah, all that.
So, that's the kind of school that I come from. That's the kind of school where my mom teaches. And God, now I can't get that stupid song out of my head. Proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. Okay, sorry, we're not doing that. Right. So yeah, and my dad became a music minister. When I was born, he was actually a high school marching band director, and then he was just freelancing for a while. He's always done a lot of that. He does like sound engineering, some producing for like small-time Christian artists. He wrote some stuff that he might even occasionally still get ASCAP royalties for. He has written a bunch of jingles, but always for the local market, so he doesn't get those residuals on national jingles. You know, he does show choir arrangements. He's really smart and creative. He got a master's in electronic music when that was like a very new field in the 70s at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. David Letterman's alma mater, my parents' alma mater, and my undergraduate alma mater. I went there too. And he actually keeps up with all the tech and everything. I mean, he's way, way, way more tech savvy than I am. In fact, in his career as, you know, mostly a music pastor, in one of his recent jobs, he didn't even have the pastor title because it was a mega church. More, I guess I would call it on the somewhat small end of the mega churches. Like, I think it had 3,000 or 4,000 regular members, but maybe it was pushing 5. Anyway, he was director of technology because they were a big enough church to have a director of technology. but yeah, no, mostly my dad was a music pastor all through my life. So as I said, when you, that's your family, you see how the sausage is made. Your social reality is a little bit different than some of the people around you. So, I saw with the church plants and stuff, some of the ugliness behind the scenes. When we spent those 2 years in Colorado Springs, 1993 to 1995, two full academic years, Dad had moved there a little bit earlier to start the job. And then we followed him out there. So I got moved in the middle of sixth grade. No, wait, it was 2.5 academic years, because I was in public school for through the second half of sixth grade. And kind of like a fish out of water, but eventually I liked it. My mom likes to remember that I complained about it every day because this makes her feel good about forcing me to go to the Christian school in seventh grade. I like to remember that, you know, I begged to be able to stay in the public school at the end of that year. I actually got normal sex ed, and I liked the biology teacher. I was starting to consider myself a theistic evolutionist. That was drummed out of me later. But, you know, I had to go to the Christian school, Colorado Springs Christian School, where my mom was then teaching. And this is a thing I think a lot of people don't know about Christian schools, is that they generally require that children of faculty and staff attend those schools. Mm-hmm. And it used to be with a full tuition waiver, and I think now it's usually a discount, and it increases with seniority. Also, those teaching jobs, and I assume the staff jobs too, pay a lot less than similar jobs in public schools. And so you're always, you know, you're usually of a different social class than many of the people whose parents pay the full tuition for them too.
Okay,
to go there. You know, so, I mean, we were middle class, but a lot of the kids in our Christian schools were upper class, and, you know, talking about going to Cancun over spring break. And I was like, hey, we went to the state park. you know, I mean, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so that's just a little awkward. But yeah, you're actually required to be there. And the only way you're ever going to get out is if you get yourself expelled, which I was certainly never going to be rebellious enough to do. You know, I'm a kind of typical oldest child. I never actually wanted to be a rebel. And now here I am trying to burn this all down. But, you know, it's not for lack of trying to stay in or for trying to make it work, trying to change it from the inside. I mean, for well over a decade, I didn't really speak out much publicly because I didn't want that family drama. And, you know, at a certain point, I didn't know if I was doing it to protect myself or to protect them. But anyway, so I get sent back to a Christian school in seventh grade, Colorado Springs Christian School. And there, I think it's even more extreme than Heritage in some ways. For example, in seventh grade Bible, we got some sort of worksheet, as far as I recall. I think it was a supplemental sheet that was handed out. And it had, you know, three sort of caricatured illustrations of Noah's three sons, right? Shem, Ham, and Japheth, with arrows pointing to what parts of the world they supposedly populated after the flood. And, you know, Shem looks like a sort of stereotypical white guy, Japheth, stereotypical kind of, you know, folkloric Asian caricature. And then there's this very racist black caricature of Ham with an arrow pointing at Africa. And it doesn't actually say that this is why we had slavery in America and that was okay. But that was clearly the subtext, right? Like, this was clearly teaching us the curse of Ham. And as I recall, the Bible instructor seemed a little embarrassed by this worksheet himself, but he still taught it. It was, you know, in the curriculum, I guess, that he had developed or they had developed. So there was that. And then there was also, and this is one of the first moments I think I remember having some real serious doubt about certain things, though that didn't really become a big part of my life until I was 15 or 16 and I read the entire Bible through for the first time back in Indiana, going back to Heritage Christian School for high school. But in seventh grade, we had this sort of like, quote unquote, retreat day, hashtag worst retreat ever. So, I mean, even worse than the senior trip where we had to listen to two sermons a day at this Word of Life Bible camp in Scroon Lake, New York. And they showed A Thief in the Night as our entertainment one evening. But anyway, so Colorado Springs Christian School, we had this retreat where it was all about extreme purity culture. So, you know, all the typical fear-mongering and misinformation. Oh, condoms fail all the time. Condoms can't prevent AIDS, virus, pregnancy, diseases. But how dare you even be thinking about this? And they actually told us all that stuff about, you know, you shouldn't do anything with a boyfriend or girlfriend that you wouldn't do with someone else's husband or wife because you're probably not going to marry that person. Therefore, you are cheating on your and their future spouse by holding hands or whatever. Yeah. You know, so that kind of rhetoric. And then, you know, at the end, and now we would like you to all go sit by yourselves and prayerfully consider whether you are able to sign one of these purity pledges, but don't sign unless you really mean it. You know, spoiler alert, we did not know if we would be expelled if we didn't sign it. So, of course, we signed it. Also, of course, at the time, I wouldn't have tried to argue that Christians are not supposed to have sex outside of marriage. I would have been all on board for that. But there was a part of me that just saw the obvious extreme emotional manipulation and really didn't like that. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, fast forward and, you know, we end up back in Indiana because Pastor Ron Clarkson at Community Church in the Rockies became very sort of openly authoritarian. And I'm at Heritage Christian School again, and I just start to have a lot of doubts. I mean, I read the entire Bible through, and I was seeing some contradictions and inconsistencies and just things that made me uncomfortable, like divinely ordained genocide, and was just really thinking, I don't know that I can really make all this hang together with biblical inerrancy. And so I went to talk to a pastor about it, and he gave me an apologetics book to read, and I don't remember which one it was. It wasn't super famous. It wasn't Lee Strobel or Josh McDowell, but it was in question and answer format. And so I read through it, and I just, you know, found the answers kind of too glib. And I went back and I told him that, you know, I still had doubts after this. And, you know, here suddenly the problem is with me. Oh, well, you know, if I can't see that biblical inerrancy is the obvious truth, you know, something must be impeding the Holy Spirit's ability to influence me as I read. I must be harboring sin in my life. I must have opened myself up to demonic influences. I could be demonized. And so, you know, he prayed against the demons, and I smashed one of my secular CDs in case I was a vessel of demonic influence. I smashed some. I tried to smash like this beautiful set of painted miniature Beijing opera masks that my paternal grandma gave me, because she was much more of a free spirit than her son. Though he was, my dad also was never a great fit for evangelical subculture. Thankfully, he has listened to me. I was able to feel him out on a lot of things over the years. He's a fan of Rob Bell and Richard Rohr and Peter Rollins and all those people now. And weirdly, because he thought he was going to just kind of have to finish his career in an evangelical church, but, you know, they pulled one of those nasty things where they try to force somebody out just before they're going to be fully qualified for their Social Security benefits, the full Social Security benefits. And so he had to do a job search. And now he's in an LGBTQ-affirming ELCA Lutheran church, which, wow. Hey, go dad. It's a much better fit for him. Yeah. And so he's the music pastor there, which is just, you know, nice. Not everyone gets to have that kind of, you know, story with even one of their parents. And my parents are still together and everything. But, you know, I think my mom still feels like she needs to have just much more conservative theology. And indeed, if she were to say, you know, it's okay to be queer or whatever, it's okay to be gay, I think she could be fired. So she definitely can't openly say that.
Yeah.
But I don't think she even believes it.
You don't think she believes that?
I don't think that she is affirming, but what is able to do is to, you know, start to respect my boundaries more and be accommodating and recognize that I'm an adult. And that has been a very difficult place to get to, but I have a pretty good relationship with my parents at this point.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, one of the things that you mentioned there in that bit was just like, you know, change it from the inside. I think many of us have this idea. We see a lot of problems, glaringly obvious problems within Christianity, within the church, things with the Bible that you've mentioned, and we don't know what to do with it. But many of us, I think, have like this Messiah complex baked into our DNA as Christians, where we're like, I'm going to save the church from itself, basically. And I don't think that's the worst. I mean, to a degree, I think that's a really beautiful desire. But at the same time, I think a lot of us, what we're running into, we're like, no, like fundamentally, you know, Seth Andrews, I had him on my show. Mm-hmm. He said, like, what, you know, if people are, if you're, the fundamentals of your religion are causing people to question, maybe there's something wrong with your fundamentals. And
yeah, you know, hell, I don't even want to save Christmas at this point. The year without a Santa Claus? You know, maybe there should have been a year without a Santa Claus.
Right, right. Exactly. But it's just interesting. So you mentioned even, you know, a lot of people, they don't even want to talk to people in this evangelical space who have left. They've decided, like, or they have walked away. And, you know, you mentioned, I forget the gentleman's name, who kind of helped spark this conversation on Twitter, but
Rod Dreher. Rod Dreher, editor of the American Conservative.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, leaders, people like him, or you made me immediately think of Brian Houston. I'm sure you'll recall when he said, when someone can just walk away from their faith, I would question the strength and validity of their faith in the first place. Stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Classic Christian gaslighting.
And one of the things I love so much, even just in Hemant Mehta. I know I'm kind of bouncing all over the place with people, but this that's is okay, the conversation.
That's what I do too.
I just loved what he had to say, which was whenever pastors, and I'm quoting, whenever pastors try explaining why young people walk away from church, they often blame the bad eggs, the pastors who water down the Bible or commit moral failures. They rarely recognize the lies or the spiritual, mental, physical abuse because those things are baked right into the system.
Yeah.
And so I guess for me, really what led to this for me was like, and again, I'm working through some of my own weird indoctrination stuff, but like when I think when a lot of Christians hear I left because, or they hear the term evangelical, like a guard goes up, or mm-hmm. or there's this like, oh no, like they've fallen away, where like, in for me, I don't really share that view, but it does break my heart a lot because because I do see a lot of pain and a lot of trauma caused from Christianity and the church and mm-hmm. and just really harmful stuff. And so I guess in a really, really roundabout way, I'm sorry, Chrissy.
No, fine.
What, like, when someone just says, like, you know, things like, how could you just walk away? You never had faith in the first place. Like, what would you say to that?
I would say, I mean, it's hard to know what to say because whatever you say, they're not going to listen, right? So you have to be willing to reclaim your own story for yourself and not for them. But I think that when we speak out to a wider public, we do help to hinder their ability to steal our stories, to appropriate them and tell them for us in their twisted way. But in fact, it's generally true that it's people who leave are among the most conscientious believers. They tried so hard to make it work and couldn't, and came to the conclusion that they had to leave, which was very painful personal choice. But it is dangerous for someone who is caught up in, you know, the Christian worldview stuff to entertain the possibility that leaving could be a valid choice because they fear for their very soul when doing that, right? It's why evangelicalism, fundamentalism teaches you to gaslight yourself. Your doubts could be from the devil, right? I was told this. It was a big part ultimately of my deconstruction, and it's one of the most glaring incidents of spiritual abuse that I can look back to in my life and see as sort of formative when I was about 16 years old. I will say for that pastor that even though he's a whack job who sees a demon behind every bush and tree, he did also introduce me to the idea that perhaps hell could be annihilation of the soul, though I was still very much afraid of hell as eternal conscious torment. But, you know, that's maybe mildly, slightly more humane than hell is eternal conscious torment, you know? So I guess I should credit him for that, but mostly he gets credit for kind of fucking up my mind.
Totally.
I mean, I was so conscientious, so scrupulous. Yeah. I mean, I once spent a week with a palpable lump of anxiety in my chest, figuring that I was going to hell no matter what I did, because I'd blasphemed the Holy Spirit, because you know what I did? I'd promised God I was going to stop masturbating, and then, oops, I didn't manage to keep that vow. Amazing. Yeah. How could I fail to keep a vow that I made with such intense faith, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and that right there is a perfect example of, you can't even trust, you've been deceived. You can't even trust your own body, your flesh. It's wicked. It's, you know, your heart is deceitful above all else. I mean, it's a lot of I can't remember who said it recently, but they were on this podcast and they just said, like, you can trust yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, how healing is that? Like if you actually believed that, and I know, like you said, like for so many, no, like that right there is a point blank example of, the devil getting getting a hold of you or whatever. Gosh.
But yeah, that you can trust yourself, trust your body and your thoughts and your doubt. I mean, not that you can't be wrong, right? But that if something over time feels wrong to you, that's something that you need to check out and not just accept, oh, this is, you know, divine authority, so you can't you can't question it. Yeah. And I mean, also the message that not only can you love yourself, but you should love yourself is something that people need. And for the longest time, even after I stopped believing a lot of Christian stuff intellectually, I didn't get it. I was like, oh, what do you mean we have to love ourselves? Isn't that selfish? I pretty much hate myself, but that doesn't mean I can't try to do good things for other people. Yeah. It took me a long time to kind of realize that, you know, you'll burn yourself out if you don't love yourself and take care of yourself first.
Yeah.
And there, well, I mean, sure, there can still be situations where it could be the right thing to do or a sort of noble sacrifice to, in a certain instance, put someone's needs before your own. Or, you know, maybe even die for someone or die for a cause. But if you want to get to the point where you might, you know, be, I don't want to use the word called in the sense of like, I actually think God calls us to do things, because I don't, but I do believe that that we might feel called to do something by listening to sort of our own inner ethical voices, right? And also just, you know, what are the things that speak to us, that are meaningful for us, that we want to do in life. So maybe you get to a place where you feel like it's right for you to make that kind of self-sacrifice, though I think that wanting that to happen is twisted and probably the sign of an unhealthy mind. I mean, the whole like martyr complex thing, not a good look. If you want to get there in a healthy way to where you might make a healthy, valid choice to make that kind of sacrifice, you have to love yourself. But for the longest time, I could not believe that I needed to love myself. And so I thought that, well, it's no problem that I don't love myself. Yeah. But it was, I was in a very, you know, mentally unhealthy place for a long time. Therapy did start to help with that. But there are just some real barriers there from the indoctrination that I went through on things like, well, learning to love and care for yourself.
Yeah. Well, man. Okay. Sorry. So many good things. And if you don't mind, I'd love to just share with you something that somebody recently reached out to me and said on one of our podcasts. Just, and I try, and like, it's funny, like even in naming the podcast, like, you know, having the word Christian in it, it's like, I've gotten away from like, for many years I was, you know, training to be a pastor. I was in ministry. And like for a long time, like that is the idea. Like you're trying to like sheepdog people into belief or believing a certain way. And so with this podcast, like that's why I love having people from all different perspectives, because it's like, I'm really not trying to decide for you. Like we're all just trying to figure this out. And wherever you land, I think that's valid. So anyways, somebody recently said like, hey, I just wanted to reach out and just let you know, like, there's beauty to be found in a life without God, like, the life beyond faith. Like, for many, it could look like nihilism or empty purposelessness. I know a lot of Christians believe that, but this could not be further from the truth. This is a listener. Deconstruction, you know, I've become more alive and better than ever. Please don't turn people away from the possibility that there is abundant life without faith, because for some, this is better. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. For me, it is much healthier. And yeah, again, this comes down to the inability of evangelicals to listen without inciting these primal fears. But they literally cannot hear, I think, in most cases, that for some of us, it is indeed healthier to have no religion at all, to be an atheist, and that we can find and make our own meaning in those ways. But if you do start to really listen to people who didn't, you know, grow up evangelical, I mean, you'll see that a lot of people who don't grow up with this high control religion just don't have that whole pressing meaning of life existential issue. It's just not a thing for them. Sure, of course their lives have meaning. It doesn't have to come from some very narrow-minded, honestly, very shady and abusive deity who likes to manipulate people. That's a horrible source for meaning. But yeah, the same pastor who, you know, told me I had demonic influence and all that, and got to get that demonic influence out of my life so the Holy Spirit will again show me that the inerrancy of the Bible is just obvious. Yeah, well, he also preached at least one sermon that I heard in church where he said, if there were no God, and he's channeling Dostoevsky here, probably he knew that he was channeling Dostoevsky, but he didn't cite him. If there were no God, the only question left to debate would be whether or not to commit suicide. This is another control tactic, you know, and I don't think that he didn't believe that himself. On some level, I think he did, but I mean, we also can internalize our own oppression, right? So this idea that the capital T truth, which is weirdly full of alternative facts, like the earth is 6,000 years old, you know, is the only source of a meaning of life. It's just so narrow, but it's fear that keeps you inside.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you said a bit at the beginning was, like you said, like of the big concern that many evangelicals are concerned about is this younger generation leaving. And so like, you're like, oh, well, let's just show you what's happening. And
yeah, I'm not above Schadenfreude in that either.
You're not above what? What was that? Sorry.
Schadenfreude.
Okay. Well, sorry. I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's a word from the German that means joy in others' misfortune.
Okay. Okay. I love that. That's great. Yeah. Let's be honest. We all relish in a little bit of that. Come on. It's totally. Yeah.
I love seeing them wring their hands about kids leaving the church because I know they can't stop it. And I know that they know that they're down to 15% of the population, white evangelicals, that is.
Well, and it's interesting. So like, gosh. Well, I think for so many, again, when they hear I left because, it's like, oh my gosh, that's concerning. We want to keep our young people in. And
not even helping them solve that problem.
Totally. I mean, even for me recently, I in my Twitter bio, I just said like, fuck that is kind of where I'm at spiritually. Like, just because like, I'm in a place where, like you said, like this unholy alliance between even just the Republican Party or this misalliance with Donald Trump, like, and it goes way beyond that. There's so many other things that you mentioned, even just like this disdain and abuse of our LGBTQ plus brothers and sisters. Like, it is, there's so many things that we've done in the name of Jesus or whatever that are completely antithesis to who I believe Jesus actually was or what he represented or taught or whatever. But I think when you go through some of these I left because stories, it really is heartbreaking. And one of the things that it just made me think was, I wonder what you would say, Chrissy, to somebody who maybe hasn't left but is really torn. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, like, we find ourselves in this weird crucible of, okay, I see all this really fucked up stuff. I'm being honest. Let's be real. It's like I don't align with this. I think this is completely opposite. What do I do? Like, I don't want to. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I've heard, people, you know, that's a term. Like, what would you say to somebody who's in that place?
Yeah, well, don't worry. I'm not going to, like, you know, go door to door handing out copies of The Origin of Species. I stole that joke from a YouTube video. But anyway, I would say, listen to yourself. Take some time to really get to know yourself and what your needs are and how they're not being met in your current environment. You know, assess things soberly. Try to find some people that you can talk to safely where you can just express all your doubts. And if you can't find that, you know, in your community, maybe you try to find it online and just let yourself process, let yourself be, love and care for and trust that you will get to the right place. And that if there is a God that cares about you and that God actually micromanages things in some respects, why would he let you go astray? You know, if you're really trying, and why does that God need so much defensiveness and protection? And I would also say, there are many people who will welcome you, whether you decide that you need to just leave the church or leave religion altogether, or maybe you still want to practice some kind of religion, you can try the United Church of Christ or the Episcopal Church, or, you know, maybe go Unitarian. You can have other spiritual practices outside of Christianity, or you can leave altogether. And as long as you're being authentic and true to yourself and finding out who you really are and what you really need and just allowing yourself to bloom, you know, I don't care if you are religious or are not religious. I think that moral autonomy is, I'm going to use a real 25-cent word here, but it's a sacred thing. And I don't call many things sacred because I don't really affirm any metaphysical propositions, you know, but it is in a sense sacred to me that we respect the autonomy of other human beings to determine, you know, what is authentic to them and what their needs are and to have their experience respected. So I'm not going to tell somebody the process has to be one size fits all and they have to end up where I am. Not at all. I just want to tell them, give yourself permission to process.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, when I first saw I Left Because, I resonated so deeply because I feel very close to this group. Like, the people that I've identified with most, Chrissy, are people like yourself, people who have gone through this and maybe are, I would say, a bit farther along. And that's also assuming that there's, like, a place that you end up, like, but I feel like each person is different. I feel like that's what I hear you saying a little bit there. And I would also say, I hesitated. I wanted to share because I wanted to share my story, but I'm like, well, it hasn't been a clean break. I haven't left completely. If anything, I've just been taking a break. I've taken a time out. I hit pause, and you know, I haven't been to my church, the church that I, you know, even just the other day, somebody asked me like, oh, what church do you go to? Like here in town where I live. And I hesitated because I'm like, well, I don't really go there. It's also this weird thing with, you know, COVID, like nobody, our church isn't meeting. So it's like, even if I was going to church, is this whole weird tangled thing? But,
Is Bend the sort of place where, like, you know, most people are conservative Christians and where do you go to church is like a normal conversation starter?
No, not completely. I think it's pretty similar to Portland in a lot of ways. I know that a lot of the churches here are very conservative, but there's even a church plant from Portland here, like the whole Jesus Church movement. I don't know if you know them, and they have a whole network, but they planted a church here. But there's like a mixed bag, but it is weird. I met this person just the other day who goes to this very conservative church, and he almost like looked at me with disdain because he's like, oh, what church do you go to? And I just said the church that I normally go to. I'm like, oh, well, with COVID not going on, we're not meeting. He looked at me weirdly, like, oh, you guys are weird that you're not meeting.
Oh, geez.
I'm like, oh, okay, so I know who you are. Yeah, like.
Well, we know who he is.
Yeah, totally.
And
exactly. Oh, man. Well, it is a lot. It's a lot to untangle, and I loved what you said about just taking some time, listen to yourself, talk through it safely with somebody. Honestly, my biggest hope for this podcast is just that this could be a place for people to just kind of help process and untangle some of that stuff. I think there is a lot of pain and hurt and yeah, what were you going to say?
Yeah, that indeed there is going through this process a lot of, you know, pain and sadness and loss, but things are also gained and it ultimately is better on the other side. But I mean, I think it's always better if you really do embrace your own authenticity and your own needs. And I mean, you might have to start with figuring out what those are because you might suddenly realize you're even allowed to have needs, you know? But I do need to remember that, you know, a lot of people like yourself are still kind of in the more painful situation where a lot of the pain there is not as raw for me anymore. So I need to be sensitive to that. Cause it certainly was very raw for a very long time.
Yeah. Well, and I can only imagine that that you still have, I would assume you still have those moments. Even it's funny, you said it gets better. It's like that whole campaign. It gets better. Don't worry. Like, but it really is like, it's a transition in and of itself. I feel like,
oh, it's very big. There's a whole matter of identity loss and what some people call reconstruction can be finding out who you are without this. And some of us have never known. So it's a real mind fuck. It's challenging. And there are still some things that are very painful for me. You know, there's a close family member who has, you know, estranged me a couple of times, and we're kind of sort of not totally estranged right now. But because at this point, you know, there's no hiding my queerness, this person basically views me as a threat to their children. And so holds me at arm's length, and I love those kids. And so it's just really sad. You know, there's always going to be some of that sadness and heaviness that comes with choosing this path, but I would not go back. I couldn't force myself to live that way. I would have killed myself by now. And I mean that literally.
Wow. Yeah, man. Well, I don't know if you have time, but I would love to, could we talk about that story a little bit? I would say like came out, or even, I know you right now you're pursuing gender transition. I'd love to talk about that if you're game.
Yeah. I mean, how should I talk about it? I don't know. It's something that I didn't even realize I was queer until I was 33, because I never exactly fit a lot of masculine stereotypes, and I would get teased about it sometimes, but I just didn't have the language or the mental toolkit to figure out that, you know, gender and genitalia are not the same thing, and that sexuality and gender are sort of operate independently in our senses of self. And so I always felt off and different growing up, but I never could quite put my finger on why. And I think that plus the perfectionism from hating myself are, you know, what turned me into a high academic achiever, someone who lives in their head, you know, because I couldn't really live in my body, which I'm starting to maybe in fits and starts learn to do again. I mean, I'm not sure I ever really had much of a, you know, embodiedness in my childhood. Long story short, I used to get teased for certain things, right? Like there was this one popular boy in high school who used to like to tease me for liking Alanis Morissette. And I was just absolutely clueless about why a, you know, boy should not like an angry rocker chick who sings about how horrible men are. Like, I just didn't get like, why is that bad? You know?
Yeah, totally.
But I could always fall back on being attracted to women. And so I would mumble something like, well, I'm comfortable in my masculinity, when I got teased about masculinity specifically. But it only ever meant one thing. It meant I like girls. Later I learned that I can also like boys. But that was not something that I let myself figure out about myself again until I was in my 30s. And it's interesting that when I kind of realized I was transgender, all the leftover residual kind of fear of hell as eternal conscious torment basically faded away. So that was just super interesting. A lot of people that I had connected with, really kind of identified with or felt strong connections with in my adult life, were women and or queer. And I was actually poly dating someone in Moscow, Russia, when I was living there from 2012 to 2015, this queer girl. And she would tease me like, why are so many of your friends lesbians? And again, I was like, I don't know, that's not normal. And you know, so in the process of, you know, dating her for a short time, I kind of figured out that I didn't have to be a man. And that was great, because that never really felt right in the first place. But then I had to wait for a pretty long time till I felt like I was in a kind of stable enough time to really start maybe transitioning. And so Yeah. That was rough. But you know, here I am. I've been in Portland for a year and a half. I've been on hormone replacement therapy all that time. COVID has kind of slowed some things down a bit, but it'll pick back up. And I did just a few months ago start on progesterone after a year of estradiol, which is estrogen. So, you know, my boobs are growing. Yay. that's all I really want to say about that.
Nice. Yeah. That's great. Well, and Christy, so it's so, I mean, it's so helpful, and it's such a gift. Like, I've noticed even on a lot of, I see you put together like a lot of infographics, and even in the about section on your website, like you mentioned, like, you know, you had this queer epiphany in 2014, and like, I'm just wondering for you, like, with your religious indoctrination, like this upbringing that you had, like you said, you didn't know for a while. Like, do you feel like that, I mean, I would have to imagine that that has some sort of like repressive element to learning that about yourself. Like, would you agree with that?
Oh yeah. There was a lot of repression for all those years, when I just didn't know why I felt so different from everyone else. I was always trying to, you know, look around and see what else was out there. I think that's why I went on that mission trip, to be honest.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. It's a thing I can't stand most in so many closed-minded, particularly Christians, about this. That's the ugliest, honestly, probably the ugliest, one of the, if not the most ugliest parts of Christianity it goes beyond just not accepting, but wait, we love everyone, but with certain standards beyond it. But like, honestly, I as somebody who, again, like you even mentioned, like knowing certain people who weren't raised with this baggage or whatever, it actually helps them. Like in many ways, I feel like that does represent me in a way, but like as somebody who, I would say even myself personally, like I have plenty of feminine energy. Like I remember as a kid, I've always been somewhat like effeminate in like just being very sensitive and really, like I went through like an emo phase in high school. Like, I don't know, like, I always wore like really tight skinny jeans, and I remember getting made fun of for that. Like I was kind of bullied in some ways as a kid. But as I started to embrace my faith, this was one of the biggest things that always bothered me was this idea that, I don't know, just that our queer brothers and sisters are treated just so unfairly and cruelly and marginalized beyond any, it's just unimaginable. The Naked Pastor, I'm sure you've seen him, Dave, like his work has been so, it's just helped me even, and I'm a straight white,
he's great.
Male, you know, I just, gosh, I don't know. So for you, I mean, has this been, how has this journey been for you? I mean, when did you like fully, leave, your faith as it was in its form growing up?
I cannot pinpoint that because it was such a dragged out process. So I really can't. I knew after studying abroad in my third year of college. So let's see, I was 21. And the summer when I came back from that, I turned 22. I knew that I could no longer call myself evangelical. I knew I could not believe biblical inerrancy. I had to let that go. I didn't know how to really have any other kind of faith because they always taught you that this is a house of cards. You know, everything depends on biblical inerrancy. But I just didn't know what to do with that for a very long time. I kind of just tried to process it quietly to myself mostly. I mean, I told one friend when I got back from studying abroad, and we were still, you know, home from college in summer, And I told her that I just couldn't really consider myself evangelical anymore. And it was just so clear that she had no idea what to do with that. And she had nothing helpful to say, you know?
Yeah.
Someone that I thought was like deep and might have, you know, been able to think outside the evangelical box a little bit. And it turns out, no.
It's funny. So I've never heard that word evangelical more. Like, how would you define, like, what even is evangelical? I know it's kind of like a junk drawer term, but
yeah. Like, well, I think that the sort of sociological definition of it is more meaningful than like than a kind of prescriptive definition. But so I think that, you know, when we talk about evangelicals, we're talking about conservative Christians, mostly white, who believe in biblical inerrancy, or, you know, maybe not quite inerrancy, but they believe in, they have a strong emphasis on biblical authority. They probably at least believe in infallibility in the original manuscripts, and they believe that it's important to convert other people. And they really, really love America. And
yeah, they have all the flags.
America. No, I mean, you know, white evangelical subculture is kind of its own thing. I don't want to say too much about the issue of evangelicals of color. Yeah, they exist. Sometimes they're also conservative. I mean, Trump got more of the Latino vote this time. That needs to be, you know, kind of analyzed in terms of the politics. But obviously, there are real differences there. And yeah, there are also people of color in predominantly white evangelical churches. And I think it's important to hear about their experiences as well. You know, there's been a lot of stuff in the papers in recent years about African Americans in predominantly white churches feeling like they were not heard. And I think very accurately feeling like they were not heard and expressing their concerns about Trump and that sort of thing. But, you know, I also think that if you do want to define it in terms of like the Bevington Quadrilateral instead, well, biblicism and conversionism, and especially when you put those two things together, are still going to trend toward authoritarianism. There are people who can square that with not being authoritarian, but I still think it's very much the natural tendency of those beliefs.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah, I feel like literalism is a big one, even just in even the interpretation of scripture or whatever. But yeah, that's really, all that is just a really helpful way to define it. Well, Chrissy, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I did want to mention, I came across this, again, another infographic, and it just says, how not to talk to former Christians.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think it's really helpful. Dirty Rotten Church Kids, I don't know if you know them. They've been on my podcast, and they're just a couple of really great guys, and they're talking about, you know, their journey and all that.
Yeah, but I just kind of came across them. Because they shared it on Instagram, and I was like, why am I getting all these Instagram followers? This is where I post pictures of my roommate's dog, because she's also my best friend, and I help take care of the dog. And I post pictures of my amateur cooking. Like, what's the deal? Why am I getting all these Instagram notifications? I never get Instagram notifications.
Right. Well, and it was funny. Like, they were like, we need to find a pamphlet to, like, address when people, like, don't understand where you are now than where you were, you know, say three or four or five years ago, whenever. But I just love it. Like, you have things where you say, like, when you say we hear, like, and it's just so helpful. Like, do you mind kind of just unpacking, like, what led up to this, this, like, for you, like, maybe even just be able to highlight some of the really important ones for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, these, you know, issues had been annoying me for a very long time. And I think a lot of times some of my best work comes out of me finally getting so annoyed that I do something. A reader of mine who wants to remain anonymous gave me access to this software called Adioma, where you can make these infographics, and it has a nice library of these little icons that come with it. So I didn't make the icons, but, you know, I put them together in this way into this template, and I made the captions. And, you know, I think looking at this now, I might rephrase some of these things a little bit if I did it now. But so, you know, the first one at the top there under when you say shows this smugly smiling little guy tipping his top hat, right? And it says, why don't you try my denomination? And what I have under here is, I think you're stupid. Also, it's never valid to leave the faith altogether. Well, I think I would maybe try to phrase I think you're stupid a little bit differently, because what I was trying to get at there is that I've seen a lot of progressive Christians act like somehow evangelicals have like never heard of the ELCA Lutherans or the UCC or the Episcopal Church. And it's like, come on, we know you all exist. Yeah. You just, your churches just don't work for some of us. You have to respect that.
Yeah.
You need to stop being so bitter, angry, etc. My translation of that, and I still like this one, is nothing you suffered could be worth making me uncomfortable. And then down at the bottom, the people who hurt you aren't real Christians anyway. My translation, your experience is invalid. Real Christians are never wrong.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. Anyone who's listening, I would encourage them to take a look at this. It's on the Dirty Rotten Church Kids Instagram, but it's also, I believe, on your website.
Yeah. People can just go to cstroop.com/infographics, or you can just go to cstroop.com and click through. The infographics page is under the resources tab.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm happy for people to distribute these. They're available to download there in full resolution. And so as long as they keep the attribution and they're not sharing them for commercial purposes, just do what you want with these. Just probably don't go door to door handing them out to people early in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is interesting. I recently bumped into somebody who, you know, and I worked at a mega church, and somebody recognized me here locally. And they're like, do I know you from somewhere? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, I kind of played, I don't know. I was a little bit coy. I don't know. Like, I try not to go directly to that. And I kept saying a bunch of things. And then eventually I'm like, okay, do you know me from this church? And they're like, oh, that's it. And I'm like, okay, great. Okay, perfect. And it's always that. But it is interesting. Like, even I find myself, even with where I'm at, and even though I haven't totally walked away, but I have walked away from a lot of really toxic beliefs. I don't believe the same way that I used to. Mm-hmm. Definitely not. But it is hard to know even what to say. Cause the whole time I just kept finding myself thinking, oh, if you only knew where I'm at, like,
oh yeah. Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah. It's a whole thing, but I do want to land on this, and we can land the plane. It's your pinned tweet, and I can't help but share it. I think it's just such a great way to kind of wrap this up. It just says this: you are not a traitor to your family for abandoning their religion, not conforming regarding gender and sexuality, making your own political lifestyle and ethical choices. If your parents coerced you in the above matters, they betrayed you. #exvangelical. #empty the pews. And I just think that's for so many people who maybe were raised a certain way. I certainly can't relate to that exactly, but I think that's really helpful. What would you add anything to that?
Thanks. I mean, if there's anything that I want to preach, I suppose, I guess it's two things: moral autonomy as the root of the dignity of the person. So yeah, I'm looking at you, Catholic natural law and all that sort of theology. You are defining dignity of the person from outside human experience. That doesn't work. Moral autonomy and epistemological humility. Those are the two things that I want to preach. Those are sort of the two guiding principles of my life, I guess. Be humble about and just conscious, as conscious as you can be, of not knowing what you don't know, and of the fact that you don't know everything and you can be wrong. And as long as other people are not harming you with their beliefs, leave them alone. You know, obviously we do have to talk about when certain beliefs become harmful or potentially harmful, and how in a democratic society or just a diverse society, we can navigate pluralism. and there can be some thorny issues there, but yeah, that's how I would sum it up. And I guess I'd also like to say that if people listening to this want to find other ways to look into the stories of people who have left conservative Christianity told by ourselves, I'm the co-editor of an anthology of personal essays with my my good friend Lauren O'Neill called Empty the Pews, Stories of Leaving the Church. It was published with an Indianapolis-based publishing house, Epiphany. And yeah, you can pick it up. You know, you should be able to order it anywhere that you buy books. So yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Well, and I saw on your Patreon, like, you have like mugs and ask me about my pluralist agenda.
Oh, yeah. I love that. So I basically made those things for in order to have like some swag for Patreon rewards, but people can go to the Cafe Press store and buy those if they want to.
Yeah. I love that.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I know you're doing a blog and, you know, you have the website. So where can we find you on Twitter, your website, all that good stuff?
Yeah. Website again is cstroop.com. Twitter, I'm at @C_Stroop. My career is a freelance writer. If you can support me on Patreon, that is super helpful. Any bit and any, you know, any amount helps. And I write these days most frequently for Religion Dispatches and The Conversationalist, but you can also find my work in places like Foreign Policy Magazine and Playboy and Dame Magazine. And some others.
Perfect.
Oh, Political Research Associates. As I should mention Political Research Associates. Good folks there. Very glad to have done some stuff for them.
I love it. Well, I'll make sure to have that linked in the description of the show. But Chrissy Stroop, thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for having me, David.
All right. There it is. There you have it. Wasn't that incredible?
That was breathtaking. Man, Chrissy's a really cool girl.
She's awesome. Yeah. Really interesting conversation, and you should definitely check out her work and visit her website, cstroop.com. She, you know, kind of keeps a blog called Not Your Mission Field. It's really interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. really, really interesting, and the first trans person we've had on the show.
Sweet.
Yeah, so pretty awesome. I'm all for having different perspectives of all types on the show. And so, yeah, hope you enjoyed it. And last but not least, Jake, what should people do now?
People should, they should join our Patreon.
They should. They should join our Patreon. We've got three different tiers you can join.
Bunch of merch.
But we've got some stuff going on. We've got some rewards. For as little as $7 a month, you can join our small but mighty community, and you can join our monthly Zoom hangouts, our community discussion groups. Mm-hmm. All of this is exclusive to the Patreon group, and so you should check that out.
It's kind of like my Costco club membership.
Exactly, but like way better.
And Costco time us.
And you get a Jesus pin.
Oh yeah, so they don't sell it at Costco.
No, they do not. So check that out. Patreon.com/refreshingly honest Christian. And also, if you haven't already, please leave us a review in iTunes. Give us 5 stars, please.
And Yelp.
And on not on Yelp. But you can you could go to iTunes, give us a review, and if we like it enough, we'll probably even read it on the air. I don't know.
We'll give you a shout out.
A little shout out.
Wait, we should give a shout out to Slinky.
Oh, yeah. Josh Slinky. We hung out with Josh on our Instagram Live. You can also check us out on Instagram, First Name is Christian. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're basically in the 21st century. So that's it for me.
That's it for me, too, man.
Yeah.
Shout out to my boy, Slinky.
Shout out, Slink.
Keep it real, playing COD, bro.
That's right. And as always, we're reminding you to stay sweet. Thanks for tuning in, y'all.
Adios.
Bye-bye.